It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. We were talking a couple segments ago about rules of places where you would and would not try Mexican food. Amy and I have a Texas-only rule when it comes to Mexican food. Text message. Tried Mexican food in the Netherlands. Big mistake.
Oh, way more mayonnaise, I'm guessing, than your classic Mexican
yes.
food.
Yeah. Would you like more mayonnaise on your tacos, sir? Oh, yeah. So, yeah. No, in the Netherlands, certainly overseas.
I would have stood up and yelled at them for appropriating Tex-Mex culture.
In Spanish.
You sons of bitches. Yeah. Excuse my language, kids. Don't use that language with any of the Dutch people, you know.
No, please don't. Trade deadlines. So trade deadlines.
Do all the hash you want. Yeah. But don't use that language around the Dutch.
Oh, they're cool with that in the Netherlands for sure. Trade deadline stuff. We'll hit the Colts. We'll hit them hard in the final segment coming up here and get you ready for Sunday's game. Noon kick here on Sports Radio 610, 9 a.m. Texans countdown. That would be the two fellers you're listening to right now, me and Seth. Trade deadline will become a big topic here next week, especially if the Texans lose this game on Sunday. Because even if they win this game, there will be, I'm sure, because there have been in every game this year, certain things that are going to concern us. They've, other than the Patriots game, they haven't had a win yet that has anybody feeling amazing coming out of it. I think we feel really good about this team overall, just based on the record, talent level. You're going to get Nico Collins back, and so forth. There's a lot of fun games the rest of the year, too. It's a fun schedule. But especially if they lose this Sunday, Seth, the trade deadline will be 8 days away at that point. Mm-hmm. And I think for the Texans, my guess is that the looks will be on the, ironically, because it's been the better side of the football so far this year, the defense.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's probably more the places where trades might address things.
I think the trades, look, an offensive guard, I think, is a very real possibility. And I think there's enough people out in the league that run similar systems, similar terminology, et cetera, that you could find a guy who is plug and play. But I think that defensively, the one thing that I still really have questions about is, okay, versus the high-powered offenses in the playoffs, can you play in man when you need to play man? And I just, even with Kamari Lassiter coming back, I'm not 100% confident about that they're as broadly deep as they need to be in the defensive backfield. So a cornerback from one of these laggard teams would be a welcome addition.
Yeah, I think so too. And we're starting to see which teams might be open for business from that standpoint. God, this might be the first time, if my team traded for a guard, I'd be like, damn, I'm
hell
pumped
yeah
about this. Hell yeah.
Joe Bitonio, doesn't have to go the Joe Thomas route of spending his entire career on the Browns and just languishing in non-relevance. Come on here.
Here's the problem for trading for Joe Bitonio.
Is he injured?
No, I'm looking at his spot rack page.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of money, like with a lot of their guys, to accommodate Deshaun's contract. He's one of the guys they restructured. So he's got all this dead money crammed into these voidable years. I'm fearful of what you'd have to give up for the Browns to take that big a cap hit for a guy who's one of their foundational guys. Like Joel Bitonio is as brown as there is a Brown right now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But a guy like that, though, you know, just an upgrade at guard. That's about as plug and play as you could get on the offensive line right now, probably, Seth, right? Is like, hey, I mean, I'd rather have a brand new guy playing left guard who has to get acclimated than Kenyon Green continuing to do what he's doing.
Right. And I think the fear with Bitonio, too, is that, okay, he's getting up there in years. He's still, like, he's in his 10th or 11th year. So, and he hasn't been as good this year as he typically is, but I always think of Andrew Whitworth when it comes to something like that. Like, okay, how much of is he just a victim of everything else that's happening offensively right now? And if in a new system, in a new environment, and with some real genuine hope, you know, they got, how many years did the Rams get out of Whitworth after they signed him basically as a, he'll stick around for one more year before he retires?
Enough to get a Super Bowl out of him. Yeah. I know that. You know, he was a big fixture on that left side for the team that won it all in 2021, if I'm not mistaken. So, I think Whitworth played till he was damn near 40, didn't he?
I think he played 5 years with the Rams. Yeah. He ended up playing 5 years with the Rams.
He's 42.
40 years old his last year.
He's 42 right now. He came into the league in 2001. So Whitworth, that's an interesting comp. Betonio's 33 years old right now. So that would be one. It's been interesting seeing some of the speculation about the wide receiver position. By far the most fluid and relevant position throughout the offseason in terms of transactions and contracts and things like that. Trades, discussed with their employer, things like that. John Mechie to Washington for a sixth-round pick is a trade that is being suggested in a piece, I believe, on theathletic.com. Mm-hmm. They've got eight wide receiver trades that should happen, you know, that eight wide receiver trades that this particular group of folks would do if they were GMs. And one of them is moving John Mechie to Washington for a sixth-round pick.
That's not rich enough for me. I still look at John Mechie as a guy with upside. In some ways, I almost look at him as a quasi-rookie because he hasn't physically been this version of himself until now. Yeah. He was between his knee injury and that he was recovering from and then having, cancer.
Yeah.
He just wasn't the same. So we saw that physically he looks like a different guy this year, but he's still not as dependable as Xavier Hutchinson, but there's upside there. I think if I had to choose between Robert Woods and John Mechie right now, I'd feel better about trading away Robert Woods.
Yeah.
To a team. Now you'd be trading him away to a contender probably who wants some vet. No team that's like it's a like obviously they're going to be buyers at the trade deadline, but I think they want to look at Robert Woods as a cherry on top in terms of reliability amongst our defense or amongst our receiving corps in the NFC.
Yeah.
I don't want him to go to an AFC team. Obviously.
Mike Williams back to the Chargers is one of the deals in this thing. Cooper Kupp to Pittsburgh. I'm with you.
I don't think Cooper Kupp's going anywhere.
Well, I think the Rams winning last night. The trade deadline's less than 2 weeks away. So teams deciding whether or not we are buyers or sellers has to happen imminently. I think the Rams beating the Vikings and getting Puka Nacua back as well to pair with Kupp probably has them looking at their season a little bit differently now than had they lost to the Vikings last night.
It's like the Astros in their June surge. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, we got to whatever mentality, even though the Astros weren't publicly saying that they would ever be sellers at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
There was an opportunity. There was a window there where, they totally should have been until all of a sudden they had that surge. So, right now the Rams winning that game and the double whammy is seeing what it looked like with both Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua on the field together. They've got very, I would say, right this moment, there's no way in hell they're thinking about being sellers of the
trade. And they got Seattle next week. Like the Rams go to Seattle and win. I don't have the standings in front of me, but Seattle's 4-3 right now, and I know they're leading the NFC West. Like the Rams could be in first place 10 days from now in that division. That division is very winnable. Because I don't think anybody anticipated San Francisco being sub .500 at this point in the season. So I don't think Cup's going anywhere. I'm glad for that.
That division is just jam packed. 4-3 Seahawks at the top with the 3-4 49ers at the bottom.
Isn't it crazy? Like there was a time. I feel like there was a time within the last 2 years where we were like, this is the best division in football with these four teams, and I feel like we've said that about the NFC or the AFC North coming into this season. All four of these teams could make the worst team in this division is the Pittsburgh Steelers, who never finish below .500. Oh, either that or the Ravens and the Steelers are the only two good teams in that division.
Dude, okay, the NFC West, if you want to make it even more so, all right, the Seahawks are at the top. They have a scoring margin of plus 16 right now.
Okay.
They've scored so they're 4-3. They're winning the division. At the bottom of the division is the 49ers, who have a scoring margin of 22 right
plus
now.
Plus 22,
Plus 22,
yeah.
Plus 22. The Cardinals and the Rams are both negative. So it's just that they're 500 football teams right there.
Okay. Hold up. The Cardinals are above the Niners in the standings, huh?
Yeah, the Cardinals are. Everybody's 3-4. The Cardinals, then the Rams, then the 49ers.
Okay, and then the Seahawks.
They've all got a 429. I don't know what the division. It's got to be either division or conference record or whatever.
Yeah. So they're all 3-4, and the Seahawks are 4-3 right now.
Yeah.
I mean, and that division was
supposed to... And the worst team in the division by standings has the best scoring margin.
Has the best scoring margin and the second best odds to get out of the NFC and get to the Super Bowl right now.
Right.
They're last place in their division, by tiebreaker, they're last place in their division. At the very least, they're tied for last, record-wise, and they are still the number two team in the NFC on the odds board behind
Detroit. It's a really weird year, because even the Chiefs are the favorite to win the Super Bowl. They're undefeated, and yet, like, offensively, they're a middle-of-the-pack offense.
And I think, and that's why, just to bring this back to the Texans, before we hit the final segment and go deep on the Colts and the Texans, I think that's why, for me at least, why I have been probably more critical of a 5-2 team after wins than we would normally be. Than I was, say, back in 2012 when they started off 5-1 last time. I don't remember looking at every single nook and cranny like this. For me, a lot of it is, man, this thing is so winnable this year. Like it's a much more now. I need Derrick Henry to slow down a little bit. That would make me feel a little bit better about things. I think overall, this is as even and balanced a year as we've seen in the NFL in a long, long time.
I think the biggest thing that I was upset about with the Ravens' victory on Monday was that, okay, the Ravens were down 10, and they ran the – like as soon as they were down 10 – I think they ran the ball like 5 of the next 6 snaps.
Yeah.
So they didn't go away from the old narrative, which was based in facts, which was, okay, the Ravens are this awesome running team, but can they come from behind, or do they abandon the run too early? They did none of that. They regained the lead and then turned it into an absolute bludgeoning.
Steamrolled
them. And it's not just Derrick Henry, it's Justice Hill, the other running back, who's been lethal as a receiver.
Right.
And then you pair that up with Derrick Henry, who's been lethal as a runner. And then, oh, yeah, by the way, you got Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, it's wild.
And the defense looks like the Ravens' defense has been hot and cold. They're not the same defense they were last year.
They're not. They're still pretty good, though. They still got
guys. It's a very, very good football
game. I don't feel great about moving the ball against them as a Texans fan right now. And they'll get a chance to do that on Christmas Day. But for now, we got the Colts. So let's take a look. Keys to the game and prediction from me. I gave mine earlier, but Seth gives his in the final segment of the show, and he's been very accurate of late. You'll want to stay tuned for that. That's coming up next.